Here it is. September's upon us. We have a four-day work week this week, unless you, like, enjoy your job and you're going to miss the extra day.
And now, here's Bill Bittica.
Work on Saturday. Work on Saturday. Very shortly, we'll have a phone call from a lady named Carol Bennett, and she's written a book, and it's a special thing we're going to talk about. And then, boy, there's so much going on this weekend and stuff and stuff and stuff and stuff. Here's one of the stranger things that happened this weekend for sure. I forget where it was. Doesn't matter where it was. There was a tour bus, and a double-decker tour bus, and a teenager stuck his head out the emergency escape hatch in the top of the bus just as it went under a bridge, and that kind of did him in. So can you say he wasn't using his head?
The MRI system everyone has been waiting for is now at San Luis Diagnostic Center. Patients love it. No more claustrophobia. No more masks over your face. No more tight spaces. And imaging speed to get you in and out, faster than any other magnet made. Plus, doctors love its unsurpassed image quality. The Siemens Skyra produces images doctors only dreamed of before. When you need your next MRI, ask for the new wide-open, ultra-high-field Siemens Skyra at San Luis Diagnostic Center. Even if you live in North or South County, drive a little and get a whole lot more. Best image quality, the greatest patient comfort, and the lowest possible price. Why should you go anywhere else? When you need an MRI, call San Luis Diagnostic Center. 542-9700. That's 542-9700 to schedule your exam on the most modern equipment available.
Go, Mo. Mo barbecue, please.
Mo ribs, Mo chicken, Mo pork, Mo beef, Mo burgers, Mo onion rings, Mo potato chips, Mo beans, Mo fried green tomatoes.
Mo barbecue, please.
Mo slaw, Mo tater salad, Mo house salad, Mo Cobb salad, Mo Caesar salad, and Mo's Calypso salad. Mo sodas, Mo brewskis, Mo lemonade, Mo iced tea.
Mo barbecue, please.
At Osus in Monterey and San Luis Obispo and Pismo, it's the bomb. Pomeroy's most bodacious beach barbecue, babies.
Mo barbecue, please.
That's right. It's yummy, yummy, yummy in your tummy. All right, let's do today what happened on this day in history and our birthdays and whatnot, according to the Tribune. And I have them right here for me. Our flashback, our highlight in history on September 4th in 1962, the Beatles, with their new drummer Ringo Starr, recorded Love Me Do at EMI Studios in London. More familiar version with substituted drummer Andy White and Starr playing the tambourine was recorded a week later, which is what he should have stuck with. On this date in 1781, Los Angeles was founded by Spanish settlers under the leadership of Governor Felipe de Neve. In 1969, the Food and Drug Administration issued a report calling birth control pills safe despite a slight risk of fatal blood clotting disorders linked to the pills. We're into our thought for the day. Richard Wright, who is an American author, said, "Don't leave inferences to be drawn when evidence can be presented." Judge Judy will tell you that. And our birthday's day, World Golf Hall of Famer Tom Watson is 63, actor-comedian Damon Wayans is 52, and singer Beyoncé Knowles is 31 today. Happy birthday to them, but most especially to you if it's yours.
Happy birthday to you.
Hello, Central Coast. Charter Telephone is now available in your neighborhood, and now's the time to enjoy the savings for yourself.
Hello, Simplicity.
There's no new equipment to buy. You use the same phone and phone jacks, and of course you keep the same home phone number.
Hello, Savings.
Charter Telephone includes unlimited nationwide calling, so it's just as easy to call across town as it is across the country.
Hello, Value.
Our plans come with 10 of the most popular features, including caller ID and call waiting. It's like your current phone service in every way, only better. And when you bundle Charter Telephone with Charter Digital Cable and high-speed internet, the savings only get better with one low monthly bill. So what are you waiting for? Answer the call. Charter Telephone is here. Find out more at charter.com or call 1-866-608-4134. Service is not available in all areas. Unlimited long-distance calling includes U.S., Canada, and Puerto Rico. Restrictions apply. Offer ends 12/31/07. Call 1-866-608-4134 for details.
Here's the news. Another action-filled adventure.
Here's the news. Yeah, strange thing happened in Rio Grande. A man doused himself in gasoline, lit himself on fire near the corner of Olahan Alley and Short Street in Rio Grande on Monday near the bridge. A witness told police the man fully engulfed in flames ran across the swinging bridge. He then collapsed against a tree just north of the bridge. Several people rendered aid to the man, estimated being in his 50s. The man sustained severe burns to most of his body and will be airlifted to the Fresno Burn Center for treatment. I'm not sure if he's left yet or not. Incidents of people setting themselves on fire have been on the increase during the current economic downturn. This year in Knoxville, a man lit himself on fire in his front yard after receiving bad financial news. A man in England doused himself in gasoline and lit himself on fire outside an employment office. And two Italian men burned themselves, noting their desperate financial situations. Not my choice of a way to go, but, yeah, that's what happened there. There's other news, too, that we're going to get involved in here. Man allegedly kills his father in Orchid. A man has been arrested after he allegedly shot and killed his father and critically injured his mother Monday at an Orchid Park during, in Orchid Park during a family dispute. Shortly before 6 p.m. at Orchid Community Park on Sage Crest Drive, several shots were fired. The alleged shooter then fled the scene in a black Jeep that was later found abandoned on the Stoll Road overpass to Highway 101. Suspect showed up about a half hour later after the shooting at Marion Regional Medical Center, where he had gone for an unrelated medical issue. Officers took the suspect into custody and booked him into Santa Barbara County Jail. And lastly today, a new tax on lumber was passed by California lawmakers over the weekend with full support of the timber industry. According to the Sacramento Bee, the 1% increase proposed by Governor Jerry Brown won approval by the barest of margins, 54-20, with only one Republican backing it. The bill includes provisions limiting wildfire liability for individuals and entities. Timber interests were comfortable with the proposal because it eliminated substantial regulatory fees the industry now shoulders. The tax applied to the consumer end of lumber sales within California is expected to raise $30 million annually to pay for the regulatory oversight, including the Department of Fish and Game's Timber Harvest Review Program, which we're all familiar with. That's what's happening on CalcoastNews.com as of this Tuesday morning, afternoon. It's a midday. Thank you.
CalcoastNews.com on KYNS, your news station.
Okay, any moment the phone's going to ring. I don't know. People set themselves on fire. When the Buddhist monks did it over in Vietnam, I didn't understand that. It got me over there, but that's the way I got out of it. And then when people do that, I don't get it exactly. I have to tell you the truth. What a horrible thing to do to yourself. Anyway, I think Carol's on the phone right now. Let's pick up the line and say hi to Carol Bennett, I think. Carol?
Yes, me in living color.
How are you?
I'm very fine, right down the street from you. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Carol's calling us from Santa Barbara. Carol is a columnist for the Huffington Post and the USA Today, and her book is called Reclaim Your Life and You and the Alcohol Addict. Did I say that right?
Well, USA Today would be okay, but it's Psychology Today.
Oh,
that's okay. I had an interview last week where they kept calling me Carol Burnett.
Well, you see, that's what it is.
And I say, no, it's Bennett. But you know what? It's all good.
It's all good as long as people buy the darn book, for gosh sakes.
Please. If they buy it from me directly on PayPal, I get to give part of my proceeds to the Salvation Army. If they buy it through Amazon, I get a whopping dollar.
Really?
Isn't that something? I get a dollar for the book and $3 for the download. There's that many other fingers in the pot. $1.
How interesting, huh?
Very sad.
Her book, Reclaim Your Life, You and the Alcohol Addict. We have, is it this week, this month? What are we
Well, this month is National Recovery Month,
okay.
And frankly, it should be, every month should be National Recovery Month.
I agree.
But it right now is going on as we speak, and it's not like there's a lot of shows on television, like celebrating Black History Month or parades, or something that one can be aware of this month and maybe attend an extra open AA meeting or go to their first Al-Anon meeting or something that helps them a little bit
What pushes people to go, Carol? What pushes people to go to their first AA meeting? Obviously, they probably had a problem for some time, and then they finally something precipitates them going to an AA meeting. What is there anything in particular that is?
Well, you know, that's a really, really excellent question, and I have focused, you know, my professional platform on the family, but obviously it's such an intertwined. So you can really, Bill, say, you know, what makes somebody go to their first AA meeting or their first Al-Anon meeting or seek some kind of assistance in helping them understand or start on their own recovery? And the bottom line is everybody has a bottom. And sadly, many people can go a very, very, very long time without hitting that bottom or feeling that their life is out of control or they've gotten out of yet another scrape somewhat unharmed, or if the family is in denial about their drinking, they're in denial too, or if mom or dad or husband or wife, you know, wear the big enabling cape, then they don't have to find out that things are a little tougher than they are because somebody's kind of covering up for them. If you take all of that away, hopefully the family member and or the alcoholic addict will say, you know, my life is out of control. I need to do something about it. So what are my opportunities? What is out there for me? And it is anything from an AA meeting, an Al-Anon meeting, counseling, reading a book, things like that, to detox, to inpatient recovery, you know, anything like that. But you have to be ready, and hopefully that readiness sticks beyond the initial, quote, trauma that got you there, when then the pendulum swings back to the middle, and everything is okay again. Do you understand what I'm sort of saying?
Yes, but let me ask you this. Well, first off, what we should do is clarify the difference between AA and Al-Anon and those different programs. So the AA is for the alcoholic themselves. Al-Anon is for a mate or spouse or someone like that, correct?
AA is for same soup, different bowls. Anybody that is suffering, in my opinion, from a mind-altering addiction. People then might go to, you know, Narcotics Anon, or they might go to different specific meth, this and that. Sure. AA is tried and true. I am not someone that is in recovery in that program. I have been to many open AA meetings, and I strongly suggest families to go to that to see what people look like from recovery, relapse, and hopefully back to recovery again. And Al-Anon is a warm, spiritual, and fuzzy program that sort of says this is a, quote, sisterhood, even though there are many men in there.
Right.
You're not alone, and it's okay. I went to Al-Anon for many years because my husband, his son, and my daughter were all having substance abuse issues, and it was terrific, and it would say, you know, don't be a doormat. And I'd walk out and I'd say, God, what a wonderful concept, but what does that mean? How do I implement that? Many years later, that is the platform of my practice, my book, and my columns, is here is specifically a guide of what to do, what to say, when is it time to throw in the towel? Are you living with a dry drunk? You know, what? You know, how to stop enabling, or how to, you know, stay neutral, not engage, or are you being bullied? Things like that that are more specific to hang on to.
Explain to me the term you just used, a dry drunk. What is that?
A dry drunk is someone, and I just put a blog up for Psychology Today and Huffington Post, kind of demonstrating the pieces of a pie beyond recovery of not drinking, what that looks like. A dry drunk is someone that isn't physically drinking but now needs to work on the psychological or emotional aspects of themselves, their disease. Remember, Bill, that excuse me, oftentimes when someone stops drinking or using, they're in a time warp, and their maturity is a bit clipped by their wings because they've always gone to self-medicate if they've maybe run into a problem or a brick wall or disappointment or rejection, instead of living life on life's terms and, you know, getting a tougher skin and bucking up under the pressure. They've had it the other way. So if they're started drinking or using at 20 and they're getting sober at 40, chances are they're going to really kind of be back where they are at their 20s. So a dry drunk is one that needs to now look at maybe what got them there, what can be respective triggers, how can I communicate better, do I have anger issues, what does the next 3 to 6 months look like, and really start dealing, as I say, with the emotional and psychological aspects, maybe even the spiritual aspects as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the family member is uncomfortable with the dry drunk because maybe they don't know, is he mad at me? Is this a problem? Are they taking the anger out on me because they look at me because I can drink socially, or I force them in a non-direct way to stop drinking, or they are just brittle with me or quick to anger because they're so resentful at where their life has been, or that they cannot drink, or they cannot do what they want to do. They just kind of take it out on anybody around them. That's the dry drunk.
Interesting. It certainly sounds to me like, regardless of any kind of a program you're in by itself, so you have AA. The idea, of course, is to try to have support with other people and to, through that support, not drink. But it sounds to me like, from what you're saying, counseling would obviously be very valuable in the fact that if there's something that puts you into that position, and into that alcoholic position, you have to figure out what that is and try to resolve it. Is that correct?
Well, I think whatever you can do to get your life on a normal, healthy road is terrific. Your sponsor, which people, you know, have in AA to help them go through the 12 steps and things like that, is wonderful. And I really am a big proponent of AA, even though, again, I am not in that fellowship program. But I've seen it work over and over and over again. But a sponsor is not a therapist.
Right,
you know, a sponsor
right.
is not a psychologist or a counselor.
Right, right.
They are, as Bill W. said in his book or, you know, the TV movie many years ago, it's one drunk talking to another. And here is, because I've been in your shoes, I can explain this. But maybe they haven't been in their shoes with childhood issues, or they're on their second or third marriage, and that person's sponsor has never been married or something like that.
Right,
so
right.
My feeling is if you can have that combination of that fellowship and sponsorship of AA, and just like Al-Anon. You know, I was in an Al-Anon meeting once, and somebody said, I want to be the alcoholic addict. They get all the attention. And Al-Anon, you know, my book, and I'm starting to do a lot of conferences now, which I'm so pleased about because I'm going to be a speaker, let's say, at a community outreach lecture, and then I'm going to speak to clinicians the next day. And we forget that the family has their recovery as well. That we've been white-knuckling it, kind of behind, peeping behind a thick beam, hoping that everything's going to be okay that day, and what should we do or what shouldn't we do, how should we say it or how shouldn't we say it, and that's not fair because we need our recovery, and by getting a healthy recovery for ourselves, the family members, it spills over with healthy boundaries, you know, being able to not enable but certainly still be a cheering section, all sorts of things like that. And maybe the alcoholic addict will find additional support within that family unit in a healthy way, as well as meetings or sponsorship. Am I making sense?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, ma'am. My guest is Carol Bennett. She's the author of a book titled Reclaim Your Life, You and the Alcohol Addict. I don't know if you can do this off the top of your head, and I don't want to put you in a funny spot. A lot of us have heard of Bill W. A lot of us, everybody's heard of AA. They know it's there. But there's a lot of us that aren't intimately involved in knowing about it. What give us some idea of what some of these 12 steps are.
Well, the 12 steps are, you know, that you admit you're powerless over your disease or addiction. And again, that's for the family as well. Al-Anon says you didn't control it, you can't cure it, and you didn't cause it. AA and Al-Anon are kind of a sister-brother program, at least I think so, and they go through 12 steps that say basically, you know what, I was powerless. I had to give my will and my care over to God. I have to make amends to other people that I have harmed in that way. I am literally going to get my Alcoholics Anonymous book out to see if I can find them all listed.
I don't really need them. I don't need them all listed.
That I will spread the word to others that, you know, I need, as I said, I need to make amends. I need to make a list of who I've harmed. I mean, I can't think exactly off the top of my head, but trust me, anybody can, you know, Google, you know, the 12 steps of Al-Anon or AA, and they're right there.
How in the world, because I know somebody's been through this, and I was one of the people that was apologizing.
Okay, I've got it. You want to hear them?
Sure, go ahead.
Real quick. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable, so we can say over the alcoholic. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity, made a decision to turn our will over to God, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves, admitted to God of our wrongsdoing, and to another, I'm paraphrasing here, we're ready to have God remove these defects of character, humbly ask them to remove our shortcomings, made a list of all persons we harmed, make amends to them, unless it would hurt them, continue to take a personal inventory, sought through prayer and meditation, our contact with God, and to help carry that out. I'm really kind of chopping this up.
That's right.
And having a spiritual awakening, you know, kind of pass these principles and to others. And again, I think it's really more directed toward the alcoholic and through these guidelines that are so imperative for them not to relapse versus the one in Al-Anon who, okay, if they've slipped and they've enabled somebody, it's not a good idea, but they're not going to, you know, wrap their car around a tree or get a DUI or lose their job because of it. So it's important that they're both imperative to each other, and I believe in a full landscape recovery, but each recovery is different from the other one.
Right. The interesting thing is, and I was one of the people that I was one of the forgivers of somebody that was in AA, and we had grown up together back in Jersey, and they got hold of me and said, "Here, I want to apologize for some of the stuff I did when we were kids." Well, it seems strange to me in its own way. I understand that it's good. I understand what it's a cleansing process, so to speak. But I mean, I would find it far too arduous a task if I decided I was an alcoholic to try to apologize to everybody I've miffed.
Yes, and there's and the things that I read up, there's a lot of very difficult steps that somebody says, I don't really want to make this inventory, or I really don't want to go to this person. a lot of times, and I don't want to say this over the air, but, you know, sometimes, because it sounds like I'm really doing an alcohol bashing, and I'm not. I'm not looking to throw them under the bus. But sometimes, as the recipient, I don't want to hear from that person. I don't want an apology from you because you did this, this, and this, even though you feel you need to do it. That doesn't mean I need to hear it or accept it because your program says you need to do it. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do, there's a difference.
I hear where you're coming from. Maybe it was uncomfortable for you, and I appreciate and respect that it was a cleansing, but that has nothing to do with me, and I think that many family people want to jump through hoops in order to help and support the alcoholic addict, and we're fearful to have a boundary that says, I am really pleased for you that you are pleased for where you've come in your recovery. I understand this is part of the recovery, but I'm not comfortable sitting down and having a cup of coffee and going over it. But thank you for offering. That's a nice way of still being supportive without gritting your teeth because you feel that you have to do this or they're going to be upset or be mad or possibly go relapse.
Now, here's
you
what's
understand?
Weird. Yes, but here's what's strange. I mean, Carol, in my case, I wasn't offended by it in any way. I thought it was very nice that somebody after all these years would say, you know what, I don't think I treated you well when we were younger, and I want to apologize for that. I found that a very welcoming thing.
And sometimes it does, because also maybe you were childhood friends. It's more difficult for a spouse or maybe a child or things like that. It's thicker. Yes, it sounds like something that is very gracious and caring and makes everybody feel pretty good that day. There's no question about it.
Well, but here's the thing you're saying, and I accept this. I accept me for what I am. There are people that could apologize to me and say, you know, I'm sorry I screwed your life up a little bit when we were younger. And I say, thank you very much, and I'm glad to see you and talk to you. And we are friends again, so that's very nice for me. But the thing that I would have to say is there are people I don't want to hear it from. You know, I wouldn't want to hear it from. And if I heard it from, I might not be very forgiving about it.
Yes.
Okay, and that's what you're saying. You're saying,
I mean, you have to take care of yourself, Bill.
Right.
And sometimes the family doesn't do that because we're afraid we're going to be punished or you're not going to be supportive or we're going to be judged. My family judges me very harshly because I have a difficult relationship with my daughter. It's on hiatus because I don't want to hear anymore that I'm a bad mother or I took her childhood away or why did I adopt her. Mm-hmm. So I have family members that, but it's your daughter. These are legitimate questions. I said, yes, they are, but not when they come up every time just because I won't buy her a ticket to go to a concert.
Right, right.
So it's hard. It's a hard road and existence when you love and live with an alcoholic addict that is, you know, a close family member. And for every one alcoholic addict, there's four or five family members that are totally enmeshed in their loved one's substance abuse issue.
Do you think, Carol, is there a, let's see if I ask it this way, is there kind of a loving nudge you can give to somebody? Is that possible, or is it people say, well, if they're not ready, they're not ready?
Are you talking about loving nudge to the family? You know what? You're helping his situation by doing this, this,
no,
and this.
No, a loving
nudge
from
to the alcoholic
to
addict.
The alcoholic.
Which nudge are we talking about?
The alcoholic. The nudge to the alcoholic.
Well, it depends. You know, if it's somebody that lives with you and is a family member, it's you have to hopefully have some boundaries that say, I'm not comfortable with the way, you know, you're living here. You're not working. You're watching television. Your room is a mess. You're drinking all the time. You know, here's some things that might have to be implemented or you may have to move out. If it's a friend, you know, at a party, you hopefully can go up and say, you know, hey, Mark, or hey, Tracy, or Susie, I love you. I've noticed a little bit of, change in your behavior. I'm certainly no one to talk, but I've been down that road maybe a little bit, or I haven't been down that road, but the bottom line is I'm a friend, and, you know, if you ever want to take a walk or go fishing or have a picnic, I'm there for you. Not, I'll take you to an AA meeting.
Right,
or my
right.
uncle's been in AA for 10 years. Don't say that. That's only going to make them defensive and run the other way. As soon as you leave the door open, because you say what you mean what you say, and you get off the stage and you give a squeeze on the shoulder, that's when you're going to be of help. Not when you go up to them crying and saying, hey, man, I think you're going to die because you drink too much. And, you know, my dad died of alcoholism. They're just going to say, yeah, whatever, buddy, who are you, instead of, I don't think you're going to hear, you know what, you're right, would you mind going to an open AA meeting with me this afternoon? I don't think you're going to hear that.
Right.
Less is better.
There you go. This is Substance Abuse Month, is that what we call it?
It's National Recovery Month.
National
we
Recovery
don't want to
month.
Call it Substance
okay,
Abuse
sorry.
Month.
Oh, we're recovering.
National
Recovery
Month. And some of the latest statistics are, you know, 17.6 or 1 in every 12 adults suffer from alcohol abuse. Can you believe that? And that's only what we know. I mean, you can't take a statistic, on drinking.
Right.
You know, alcohol
lie.
Is the most commonly used addiction substance in the U.S.
Sure, sure. And people will
so
lie. People lie to people that are taking service.
Days.
Yeah, you're right. My guest has been Carol Bennett. Her book is Reclaim Your Life, You and the Alcoholic Addict. It's available on Amazon.
Or through PayPal.
Or through PayPal.
My website.
On our website, which is?
www.familyrecoverysolutions.com.
There you go, familysolutions.com. Carol, I enjoyed you the last time you were a guest. I enjoyed you this time you're a guest. You're very informative, and I much appreciate you taking the time.
I really am in your face. You know, you don't have to push me too hard to get pretty animated.
I think that's just fine.
Thank you so
thanks
much,
for taking
Bill,
the
and
time.
Letting me be of service to your listening audience.
All right, thanks a lot.
Have
okay,
a great day.
Bye-bye.
Dutchman Seafood House on the Morro Bay Embarcadero has been totally remodeled. There's a new look throughout the restaurant, including a great bar area with plenty of room for you to hang. What I like the best is what the Dutchman's new farm-to-table chef has created, a new menu that features fresh seafood. It starts with hand-selected fish delivered right to our dock and served within hours of being pulled from the ocean. It's the only way to eat. At Dutchman's Seafood House, you'll enjoy waterfront dining, creative cocktails, a nice selection of reasonably priced wines, and a tempting variety of entrees featuring seafood, poultry, beef, salads, and award-winning clam chowder that's guaranteed to satisfy your hunger. When you walk in the Dutchman, you'll find an inviting bar where weekdays we offer special happy hour pricing from 3 to 6. Formerly known as the Flying Dutchman, you'll find the newly remodeled Dutchman Seafood House on the Morro Bay waterfront near Pacific Street at 701 Embarcadero.
Yeah, I didn't tell you? I'm finally letting John take me out to lunch. I know he's not my type. I just hope he doesn't take me to someplace I've ate a million times. Oh, shoot, here he comes. Talk to you later.
Hey there, you ready for lunch?
Sure. Where are we going?
I've been dying to try Slow Brew for lunch.
Okay.
If the same old thing for lunch over and over and over is driving you crazy, stop the madness and try something new at Slow Brew. Affordable, delicious food, great ambiance. It's Slow Brew, downtown Slow, with $3 tacos, your choice of steak, chicken, or Alaskan cod. Vegetarians, try their Peace and Love vegan hummus platter. And all of Slow Brew's salads, burgers, and sandwiches can be ordered in either full or half-size portions. Even their most popular, the Thai ahi salad. Loosen up your day a little bit by adding one of Slow Brew's award-winning microbrews to your lunch. It's Slow Brew, serving lunch Tuesday through Sunday at 1119 Garden Street, downtown Slow.
I don't know about a new guy, but I definitely have a new lunch spot. Slow Brew.
I'm ready when you are, buddy. Dave Cobb. That's called Faces of the Heart. You're at Bill Benneke Talk. It's Cheap Friends and Neighbors Network. Thanks for joining me today. Hey, it's September. We're into it already, you know, up to or into September 4th, for gosh sakes. We're already in there. And big things happen. What is it, tomorrow night? Is it tomorrow night, the first football game? First regular football game? Let's cover a couple things because I think they're important. I would say it this way: sometimes thou doth protest too much. And so, for instance, there was a lot of people that were critical of Mitt Romney for going down to Louisiana and finding out how the thing was with the hurricane. The guy is the presidential nominee for the Republican Party. The man could be the next president, and he's not supposed to go. What? He's not supposed to go down there because why? Why? Lots of other people go down there. It would almost be really weird if he hadn't gone. It would have been seen like, well, he's not really that concerned about it, which we had another president that was a problem. So I don't see any reason to criticize that, I have to tell you honestly. The only thing that was wrong is he asked how it happened. Okay, but that's not the thing here. So here's the other thing. A whole bunch of people went down to the beach to thank the whales. What are we, Norsemen? Do we thank the whales down at Avila for showing up? I don't. What deity is that? Anyway, so people were down there thanking the whales. But more than that, it was a protest against seismic testing for Diablo Canyon. Julie Tacker wrote an opinion piece to CalcoastNews.com in which she said, the worst case scenario, are you ready, including 25% contingency, the take count goes like the old Christmas song, 12 Days Before Christmas. So here's what she claims could happen. The worst case scenario, 1 minke whale, 2 sperm whales, 5 dwarf sperm whales, 15 blue whales, 13 humpback whales, 25 fin whales, 97 California gray whales, a single short fin pilot whales, 3 Baird's beak, 7 killer whales, 8 striped dolphins, 8 small beaked whales, 81 Dallas porpoise, 82 long beaked dolphins, 98 Rizzo's dolphins, 114 northern right whale dolphins, 198 Pacific white-sided dolphins, 1,652 bottlenose dolphins, and 1,834 short-beaked dolphins, 76 harbor seals, 1,062 sea lions, and 1,485 southern sea otters, untold sea turtles of several varieties, numerous fish and bird species, and the next generation of sea life, including nearly 4 million larvae of all types, and a partridge in a pear tree. Here's what Diablo proposes, and I don't see any other way to do this, really, and so, but I think that there, here's the greater concern to me would be, and somebody said in a letter to the editor, the greater concern is if they leave because of the seismic testing, let's say we don't hurt them, let's say we do what PG&E has in mind, and I'll explain that, and then we don't hurt anything, the question then still is, how long can there be no noise before they say, I guess it's safe to come back? Now, that's the real concern, and certainly is a concern for our fishing fleet. But as far as doing damage to these sea creatures, the idea is to not just start in blaring away. The idea is that they go in at low volumes, and they slowly increase the low volumes over the course of days, and maybe days. And so they increase this till pretty soon, you know, the whales, the dolphins, the turtles, the everything goes, I don't really want to be here. I don't want to be around this noise, so I'm going to go out somewhere else. I'm going to go somewhere else because I don't want to be part of this noise. I have to say honestly, I don't know. I don't really know about this. Is not the issue of whether Diablo Canyon should do this and then close the doors and, you know, say they find something terrible and they should close the doors and leave the nuclear waste there. I don't know. That's not the issue. The issue right now is the whale thing and the seismic testing. And that's just my opinion, though. I think that if you're going to do it, that's the way to do it. But the big question to me is, I don't believe they're going to deliberately harm that many animals, because I think there's a way around that by doing exactly what they intend to do. But the question, of course, is, are they coming back? And I don't know the answer to that for sure. Nobody did. So anyway, that was my thinking there. I thought I'd share that with you. Okay, now, here's the way they said this, and I'll play the little excerpt from it, and we'll see how long it takes. The much-anticipated memoir of a Navy SEAL who helped kill Osama bin Laden hits bookshelves Tuesday, the 11th, next Tuesday, to an eager audience whose pre-orders have already put the book at number one on Amazon's bestseller list for 2 weeks. I can't tell you how disappointed I am in that. I'm so, so disappointed in that. But after these commercial words, we're going to find out more about what happened with this guy and what's going on.
Right here. Right.
It's actually music. 30 seconds.
appearing in this CBS 60 Minutes excerpt in disguise and under his fake name, Mark Owen, this is actually Matt Bissonnette, the former Navy SEAL who wrote the book No Easy Day, a firsthand account of being on the raid that killed Osama bin Laden.
My worry from the beginning is, you know, it's a political season. This book is not political whatsoever. It doesn't badmouth either party.
Is there classified information in the book? Maybe. Military officials tell CNN photos like this one of advanced night vision goggles that SEALs use worry them. Bissonnette's account of the secret mission has new details. He says as the team went up the stairs of the compound, bin Laden poked his head out. Bissonnette heard other SEALs fire two shots. Bin Laden then disappeared back into the room. By the time Bissonnette got inside, bin Laden was on the floor, not standing up, as was first reported. Bissonnette and another SEAL then fired into bin Laden's chest to ensure he was dead. CNN's Carol Costello spoke to Peter Bergen.
People's recollections of these events are not perfect.
The White House still addressing skeptics.
As more debriefings happened, debriefings of the special operators involved in the mission as well as others, some of the initial information turned out to be incomplete. We acknowledged that at the time.
The Defense Department is now expected to inform Bissonnette that he has violated secrecy agreements and that both he and his publisher could be forced to forego royalties. Barbara Starr, CNN, The Pentagon.
Of course, the real issue to me has nothing to do with royalties. That's not really an issue at all. I mean, fine, the guy makes money. He says he's going to give a lot of it to charity, whatever he says. It's just that, you know, it's a thing you don't do. It's just, it's not right. It's not right. If you were in the military and had any kind of security clearance of any kind, you know that it's just stuff you don't talk about. You just don't. You agree to that. You sign a piece of paper that says, okay, I'll keep this to myself. Like people that work, look at Lockheed Skunk Works and some of the Boeing, all these things that do surveillance stuff and, you know, funny airplanes and cameras and predator thingies and all that. They all sign agreements when they work on these things. You know, these are top secret things. They get clearances for that. And believe me, having been involved with somebody that did that, a friend, they every couple of years knocked on my door to ask me questions about the person. That worked out of the Skunk Works in Burbank. So it's, you know, it's just this part of what is acceptable and what is not acceptable to me. And I find it shameful that this man would even get involved in this, I have to tell you honestly. Speaking of Burbank and over there in the San Gabriel Mountains there, a huge fire, of course, which just screwed up Labor Day weekend for everybody. Luckily, the advantage to the fire is that it's burning upward in the hills above Glendora and in that area. And so there's really no structures until they get to the telescope on Mount Wilson, you know, unless that thing goes. They really no structures up there to speak of. So, you know, it's not threatening homes or anything because it's burning upwards. That's the good news. The bad news is it's still a pretty big fire. So they're working on that. They're working on that. Other things we're working on. Other things that are going on. All right. There's another thing in an article here. There's this health value of organic food is questioned. And so what they've done is they've done research and said, you know, how much difference is there in health food? I mean, if you get organic food, health food, we'll call it organic food. If you get organic food, you know, are you in better stead with that than if you got just regular store-bought stuff? They say nutritionally, no, but that's not really the issue, I think, why people buy it. I don't think people buy organic food for the nutritional value of it. I think they buy it so it doesn't have a lot of stuff all sprayed on it and whatnot. So I mean, it's nice they did the study, but I don't think that's really the point of why people do what they do. Getting kind of lost on that today, to tell you the truth. Okay, I'm just telling you. Things, of course, in New Orleans, well, not New Orleans itself, around New Orleans are still terrible. People without power like crazy. So anyway, everybody made a big thing about this. Russell Crowe was out there off of New York's Long Island, and he was paddling around in a kayak, and he got lost. I don't know how you get lost, but anyway, as they got dark, they were 10 miles east of where they had set out. So the gladiator and his friend, who the guy didn't recognize, paddled over to the boat. The Coast Guard officers pulled them up along with their kayaks, gave them a ride. So, I mean, that's all very nice, and it's not a big deal. It's like, what is this thing, the scandalous pictures of Prince Harry? They're not scandalous to Prince Harry. They're not scandalous to most anybody that, you know, matters. You know, they're not scandalous. They're a 20-year-old guy, a guy in his 20s, having a good time in Vegas. Okay. Michael Clark Duncan died. He was 54 years old, so he died very young. Probably best known for Frank Darabont's prison tale, The Green Mile. He's a Chicago native, and standing 6'5", weighing roughly 315 pounds, Duncan parlayed his considerable size in a career in a Hollywood security guard, working for the likes of Will Smith and the rapper Notorious B.I.G. His first significant movie was Armageddon. And then he was in Bones. He appeared on Chuck, 2½ Men, and lent his voice to such animated movie and TV projects as Family Guy, Cats and Dogs, The Revenge of Kitty Galore. He suffered a myocardial infarction July 13th and never fully recovered, which I think is something with your heart, is it not? Okay, anyway, so, big dude. You just never know when. All right, now, here's something that's going on. By the way, I'm going to have a guest on Thursday who I've never had. I think I mentioned this last week. I've never had Deborah Cash in here from the Downtown BIA. And I always thought, I should have talked to this woman about what's going on downtown, what people are happy about, what people are whining about, and that kind of stuff. And I thought it'd be interesting. Well, here's one of the things that is going on. Slow Plan's new holiday merriment, according to Dominic Tartaglia, who's president of the Downtown Association, not to be confused with the guy in The Godfather. They want to do some new things. They always have Santa's house, and we always have the carousel, but they're talking about doing some other stuff. They says we're brainstorming ideas, he said, and we want to think of what people might want to do with their kids. But they're thinking of different events, a bounce house maybe, caroling, craft making, whatever, in the plaza. When the weather's nice, it'll work. Boy, Tascadero's in the news, like big time. Lon Allen had a column I totally absolutely agreed with, and he said, you know, the city's about to spend $100,000 or $130,000 to hire somebody to decide how they're going to get more tourists into Atascadero. Atascadero is not a tourist destination. It may be a shopping destination, you know, for its big box stores. It may be a destination. I think for the locals, it's a destination. The downtown area is a destination. Why wouldn't it be? And I think also for people that, you know, those of us who live in San Luis Obispo, if somebody said, well, let's go over the hill to have a meal at such and such a place, I think that's quite doable. Hush Harbor's right there, the Hush Harbor Bakery. Fabulous, fabulous. All right, so well, I think scared the heck out of me and started printing. Okay. So because we have that going on right now, what can I do instead? Nothing, I'll just put up with it. Okay, fine. All right. Okay. Now, here was the thing that we talked about. It was last week, I think, that it first reared its ugly head. Mexican egg shortage leads to hoarding and price spikes. Because there's, you know, the chickens were dying off because of an outbreak of avian flu. It's partly responsible. The deadly bird flu was detected in June on poultry farms in Jalisco, and Mexico slaughtered 11 million chickens to prevent its spread. So here's the problem, you see. If you don't have chickens, you don't have the eggs. I don't know which came first, but I know that. You got to have the chickens to have the eggs. And so, therefore, they don't have the chickens, so they don't have the eggs. So, anyway, people are hoarding eggs. How many eggs do you really need to eat? I don't think I'd ever hoard an egg. If somebody said there's no eggs, I'd go, oh, okay, whatever. I think I should shrug and go, you know, okay. So much for an omelet. Yeah, but, all right. Here was the other thing that I was going to tell you about Atascadero. So now you got FEMA's looking at the deal about they gave them all this money, and did they spend it on what they were supposed to spend on after the San Simeon earthquake? And that's still up for review, and they postponed what they're going to decide on that till mid-October. You have that going on. Then, wait a minute, you had another thing here. City of Atascadero Fire Department is set to unveil its new disaster response vehicle in 2 weeks. This costs $100,000. And which to me is a much better thing to do with $100,000 than hiring somebody that's going to try to figure out how to make your town a tourist destination. Put up a, I got it. You just have to be able to afford it. You put up one of them job or dues like they have it there in London. That big eye, what's it called? The Eye. Yeah. People go for that. Or just any amusement ride, I think, would probably help. Okay. So they got the new vehicle. And they can do stuff that they've never had to use it for before, but they'll use it now that they have it, is what I'm guessing. Okay. Oh, my gosh. Do I have to eat humble pie? Oh. A very good friend of mine read me the Riot Act after last Friday morning and called and said, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me, Benica? You twit. This good neighbor policy they have, you know, where you rat people out, he said, do you know how long it took to get that in place? Now, here's what you have to understand. I come from a neighborhood. I'm just lucky. It's just one of those things that just it can happen any way in the world. It's just I ended up in a neighborhood. I doubt there's a single student except for elementary school kids. I don't think there's a single adult student in anywhere in the whole anywhere near me. And so, therefore, when I perceive this idea of people, and by the way, from what I can tell, Karen Veely was wrong, and I was wrong, you can have patio furniture on an enclosed patio, but it has to be an enclosed patio. You can't just put, you know, furniture out in the front lawn. So you can do that on an enclosed patio. So you don't have to move it to the back. The thing is that he was talking about his neighborhood, which is actually very near my in-laws, and the mayhem that goes on all the time with people having trash cans out, with people having sofas on the lawn and on the front porch, with people doing all this stuff. And he said, you know, it's hideous. We've been trying to, you know, get this cleaned up forever. And he has. I mean, this man has been so patient and worked so hard with the city and he and his neighbors to try to say, you know what? What are we going to do about this neighborhood? We have to do something about this neighborhood because it's just a joke. And I agree with him. I understand. And I feel his pain. I'm going to tell you that. I feel his pain. And because I used to live where all the Cal Poly students lived. Woo. That was quite something. And luckily for only a brief time. But anyway, so I'm going to publicly apologize to Frank and say, Frankie, I was wrong because I was looking at it from my perspective of where I live and not your perspective from where you live. And I was all wrong to do it that way. It's still... I think it's better there's an enforcement officer that would go around and look for these things rather than you having to, you know, say, here, my neighbor's a jerk. But go ahead. You know, if your neighbor's a jerk, what the heck? So here's the weird part of it. Here, and I've always really sympathized with something, and how could you not? And that's these people, I don't care what age they are, be they middle age, be they younger people, younger couples that move into that area. This is above Foothill Boulevard right there in Cerro Maldo, in that area there. The people, you know, you save your money, you work your butt off all your life, and then you buy a house, you know. And then you find out that your neighborhood is just a shambles, and, you know, there's just too much partying and too much mayhem going on. Well, how sorry are you about that? I mean, how does that make you feel when you've lived there your whole life and it used to just be families and stuff and that's all gone away? The families have decided to leave or grown up and nobody's taking their place. And so, you know, everything in the whole wide world's a rental. It's anywhere near you and you have mayhem all the time. So I know what it's like. Barking dogs could do that to me. You know, say, why do I have to live in a neighborhood with barking dogs? Why did I do this? What happened to me? Okay. That people, for some reason, the people that own barking dogs don't hear them bark. I don't know what that's about. I don't know how you do that. Anyway, maybe it's a DNA thing or something. I don't know. It must be because I don't know how you not hear it. Anyhow, maybe you just don't care. That's fine. 1 o'clock, time for CBS News.
Monday, happy days. Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday.
Happy Days are here again. I thought I'd play Happy Days because we're going to have a happy weekend, and one of the things that's going to make it so happy is the Emo Nari Festival is coming this weekend, and it's always a huge event and lots of fun, and you can just be floored by what some people can do with a piece of chalk on a street. It absolutely amazes you, and I have as a guest, I have right now, Rand. Rand. Hey. Sorry. Randy Detmer is my guest. And this was put on by the American Institute of, what is it again?
Well, hi, Bill.
Hi, Randy.
Good to be here. Thank you for inviting me. It's always a pleasure every year to come and spend some time with you. It's the E. Modinari Italian Street Painting Festival. It's co-presented by the American Institute of Architects Central Coast Chapter. That's all your friends and neighbors who are architects here in San Luis Obispo and in the county. And we co-present the event with the Children's Creative Project.
Which is what?
The Children's Creative Project is a organization out of the Santa Barbara County Schools. They also put on the E. Modinari Festival down in Santa Barbara in May, which is another big street painting festival. So it's the May in Santa Barbara, September in San Luis Obispo. And the Children's Creative Project is dedicated to providing art programs in the schools. So we'll be generating funds at this event for art programs for San Luis Obispo County schools.
Cool. Well, and, you know, as I was going to say, the only way it could self-sustain itself, it almost has to self-sustain itself these days if it's like that kind of a thing in schools. You know, there's no dough. Did Santa Barbara do theirs first, or did we do them at the same time, or how did that work?
Santa Barbara started first.
Yeah.
As you may know, because you're a very well-read and intelligent guy.
Yeah.
Street painting got its start back in the 16th century in Italy, a little town called Grazzi dei Curtatoni, and they celebrate every year a street painting festival to this day in that cute little Italian town. What happened was that the artists would show up, and they would paint on the streets and on the sidewalks images of the Madonna, and so then they were referred to as Modinari, and there you go. It is the E. Modinari Italian Street Painting Festival, and that's how it got its start back in the 16th century in Italy. And I can tell you that the street painting festival in Santa Barbara was the very first E. Modinari Street Painting Festival to make it across the Atlantic to the United States. And of course, we do ours right here in San Luis Obispo.
It's hard to describe. It's hard to people that haven't seen it. It's hard to say you can't believe what some people can do with a piece of chalk or different colored chalks, and the kind of artwork that they can do that's totally impermanent, and you know gets washed off the next day or 2 days later, but it's just absolutely it's just startling how good people are at this, and so let's talk about how this works and how you get us by us. Can you spare a square and how much it costs?
Well, the whole idea here is to raise funds for art programs in the county schools, as I mentioned. And the way we do that is we sell squares at the festival. So, for instance, Bill, if you wanted to buy a Bill Benica square, 4x6 Bill Benica square, it will cost you $75. We also have squares all the way up to 12x12 squares. Those are $500, and in everything in between. And so people purchase the square. They might purchase it for themselves. They might purchase it for their business. They might purchase it for a friend or a family member.
You can just be a sponsor of somebody that's going to do something.
And a lot of businesses will purchase squares, and so they can have their name, you know, very clearly shown at the top of the square for advertising purposes. And then they have their kids or some friends maybe be the artist, or we will provide a professional artist to actually work on your square for you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You'll provide it?
We'll provide an artist.
Oh, I thought you had to go find your own somewhere.
No, you don't. In fact, for the last number of years, I've been purchasing for my business a 10x10 square. And and the festival provides a very talented artist, many times a professional artist, to do my square. And let me tell you, they are so fantastic. They do such a wonderful job. You can't. And as you just mentioned, it's amazing to see the quality of the artwork that can be produced in 2 days on the street using chalk.
Where did they get this brochure you gave me?
That's printed up by the festival. We print up a
brochure. Where does somebody get one of these things?
Oh, you can get them online.
Okay.
We have them online at our website. That's AIAcentralcoast.org.
That's the best place to
That's
go.
That's our AIA website. And so we have that digitally online. You can download it. Or you can go to the Chamber of Commerce office and pick them up there. And some of the businesses around town have got them also available to distribute.
Is this Photoshop or is this for reals?
That is for real. Isn't that cool? That's a 3D.
Have you ever seen the guy that does all this 3D stuff? He just does these amazing things that look like they're deep and weird. And it's amazing, like,
right on the street or the sidewalk, looks like you fall right in.
I wish I could show. I could hold this up and show it to you, and just an example of what someone can do. And it's just absolutely amazing. It's all three-dimensional. It's cool looking. Plus, there's some other ones in here, too.
The image that you are referring to, which is on the cover of our brochure,
yes,
was our featured artwork that was done by Tracy Lee Stumm, whose picture you see there on the brochure, at the mission steps, right at the base of the mission steps. That square is a 12-foot by 18-foot square. And our featured artist this year is an artist named Blair Looker. And she'll be doing something fabulous. I can't tell you what it is because it's a secret. You got to come and see it.
Secret.
I don't know what it'll be until she gets started.
Now, we should mention times and all that. It's this Saturday and Sunday, September 8th and 9th, in the Mission Plaza. And what times does it get underway?
Well, our times are between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m., but the artists are typically working much earlier than that. And so you can come by before 10 o'clock and see everybody getting started and watch the evolution of these wonderful images on the pavement.
How fun. So absolutely fun. Every year it's fun. Can you get an Italian ice or anything where they've got people hawking some kind of food?
There will be some food booths and some vendors and some sidewalk entertainment. And so we keep it lively, and it's a great family event. And what's really fun is you come by on Friday. Not Friday, I'm sorry. We start setting up on Friday. Some of the artists actually do come Friday afternoon and Friday evening and get started. But you come Saturday morning and watch the artwork just sort of start sketching, laying it out. And then kind of come by after you've had lunch or you're wandering around downtown, come by in the afternoon. And then come by the next day and watch the evolution.
Yeah, really.
Which is really fantastic. It's really a lot of fun. We expect to get between 4,000 and 5,000 visitors that'll come by during the weekend.
Wow. Now, and we're supposed to have a good weekend, good weather this
weekend.
Weather's
going to be beautiful. In fact, it's probably going to be kind of warm.
Yeah, actually, going to be a little warm, I'd say. And here's the other thing, too, though. Everything doesn't have to be this marvelous piece of artwork. I get a huge kick out of the stuff the kids do. You know, you get kids that fill in a square and they do their little thing, and that's always a hoot.
Well, the kid aspect of our festival is really fun. We provide free squares, 2x2 squares, for kids. If all they have to do is buy a box of chalk for $6, and then they get a free square, and those are laid out in the parking lot behind the County Museum. So we have dozens of kids out there doing the most creative, fun images that you can imagine. Sometimes more fun than what you see the professional artists doing. The kids are just great.
They are great. Kids are insane. Kids are like crazy. All right, so this is it's free admission, too, by the way, and it's 10 to 6 daily, and this is this Saturday and Sunday, and it's right at the Mission, and so there's stuff done on the Mission area, and there's stuff on Broad Street.
Broad Street and Palm Street.
And Palm Street.
In front of the County Museum and next to the Mission. And throughout the plaza, there'll be artwork happening, and the feature square, as I mentioned, will be at the base of the Mission steps. So that's always sort of the big draw. Everybody wants to see the big square. But we have a lot of fun. There's still time to buy a square.
Okay, buy a square.
You just got to give a call to Shelley at 927-1697, 927-1697, or you can go to our website, AIACentralCoast.org, and we'll still have some squares for sale, and you can come down there and either participate or just come and watch and have fun.
It's going to be a good time, and really, again, it's just it's a nice family thing. It's a great family event, and it's a little end of summer kind of a thing, although I think all the kids started school about 3 weeks ago. I don't get that, but I think it's because they get so much time off at Christmas and Easter now, they got to start a whole lot earlier.
The schools seem to start at different times, too. Quest is already going, but
right.
Polly won't start for a couple of weeks. Yeah. The public schools, some of them are going, some of them aren't.
Now, when you were young, did the public schools, when I was young, it was always after Labor Day?
I can't remember.
Well, there's nobody to go to school in August. If they said there's school in August, you say no.
School starts in September. We all know that.
It's Jersey. We go, what's the matter, you? We don't go in August. Let's talk about architecture a little bit because you're the architectural guy and architect of the stars. So here we have some interesting things going on, I think, in our own downtown. And what we're seeing now more and more is this mixed-use type of structures. you know, like the Garden Street Project, and I think the one up the street that's brand new, across from 7-Eleven, I think it has some apartments in there,
yep.
Condos
yep.
in the top.
Yep.
And I just saw where they put condos in. I just saw where there's condos in the top of Railroad Square.
That's right. They call them lofts.
Lofts. Because yeah, that sounds you get more. You get more money. I was going to say, yeah, you get an extra $100,000 for that. Anyway, but I think that's a fascinating idea. Now, do you know how well they're doing selling those?
I think they're doing fine.
I think they are too.
Mixed-use projects have always been a darling of the city of San Luis Obispo. The city has always encouraged mixed-use projects. The concept is kind of based on the old-fashioned downtown that you may remember, where you got
right.
mom and pop living upstairs,
right.
and they got a little general store downstairs.
Right.
So during the day, it's busy, lots of commerce going on, people are shuffling around, and then at night, people are living upstairs, so there's still activity, people coming and going, visitors and so forth, and so you have this vibrant downtown that happens, daytime and nighttime.
Right.
When we started suffering urban sprawl,
yes.
Suburbia. You know, became a place for people to move to. They moved out of the cities. They moved to suburbia. The towns all kind of died at 5 o'clock. So the concept...
Well, let me mention, San Luis Obispo really died at 5 o'clock. I don't mean sort of, kind of. I mean, it died
it
at 5
used to.
O'clock. It did. It
we like, all can remember that.
It was, like, amazing.
So with mixed use, the idea is that you've got commercial spaces downstairs on the ground floor, and you got maybe some offices on the second level, and you got residences on the third, or you got residences on the second. So they call it a mixed-use project. Creates some vitality in the downtown area.
It's unique, I think. I think people would obviously perceive this as, you know, it's a kind of a unique place to live if you're right downtown. And the nice thing is you're going to save a whole lot of dough on gasoline right now, and that's really cool.
Don't need to drive around town, do you?
Yeah, don't have to drive at all. You can just kind of scoot around. You know, we're pretty good in San Luis. You know, it's always a tough thing to decide on bus routes and things like that, and how often you're going to service them, and it gets to be kind of hairy a little bit. But if I could get a bus from where I live to here, and it wouldn't take 17 hours. I would be totally willing to take a bus.
Do you remember when we first got buses in San Luis Obispo?
Yes.
They were kind of small, funny little buses.
Yeah.
But it was a really big deal.
Yeah.
And I was just out of school, I think, out of Cal Poly. And I was excited about that. Couldn't wait to ride the bus. But often the bus didn't go where I wanted to go, and so I didn't do that a whole lot. But as you know, we got a great bus system in town, and a lot of people take advantage of that.
My wife used to, when she was a little kid, they'd catch the Tropicana bus when Tropicana was the when mm-hmm. that was actually student housing.
Yeah,
and they had a double decker bus, and they'd just ride around town on the bus. You know.
Well, we have a double decker bus now.
Yeah, we do. And you know what? I don't know the first thing about how to figure out what schedule or what bus is what. And I was on the internet looking to say, there's no way that it must be a Cal Poly route.
You're talking about the double-decker bus?
Double-decker, yeah.
I believe it does go by Cal Poly, but the thing that's important about the double-decker bus route is it has to go where it can get underneath
all
the stuff.
Oh, bridges and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so it's limited in where it can go.
Well, that's okay, but if I wanted to ride the double-decker bus, you know, take my little niece and nephew and ride the double-decker, how do I know what bus it is?
I don't know.
I don't either. I looked at the thing. It didn't tell me anything. It just tells it's a route, but
I'm
I don't know what
route. I'm an architect.
Okay, an architect.
I'm a bus driver.
All right, I was going to ask you something else about architecture, too. We were talking about downtown and people moving in downtown. And, I had a really good question, and I really forgot it. But that's really like what happens at this stage in life. So I guess I'm not going to worry about that question. Randy Flies, my guess is Randy Detmer, architect Randy Detmer, and Randy flies his own plane. And it's interesting that you said, and I admire you for this. Not that you can fly, because that doesn't make any sense to me at all, people getting in those things. But the fact that what an excellent way to enhance your business by being able to go someplace else and do architecture work.
You know, it's one of those things you got to be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
I started flying about 35 years ago right out of college, and I fell in love with aviation. And I always dreamed about being a commercial pilot, you know, maybe being an airline pilot. You know, it's pretty cool. And that never happened, of course. I ended up staying in architecture, but I continued to fly, and I always wanted to be able to somehow incorporate flying into my business. And, you know, lo and behold, about 15 years ago, I started getting very busy in the healthcare world, and I was picking up clients that were scattered around the state of California and some of the other western states, and I had to start flying my own plane to get to these remote sites and places that were not well served by the airlines or were very, you know, long ways to drive. And so it's been really interesting, and I feel very fortunate I've been able to combine two passions in my life, architecture and aviation. And so I'm flying about two or three times a month to various locations in California or in other states.
I don't know anything about little airplanes, but private planes. I shouldn't say little airplanes. I don't know anything about private planes. So if I said to you, what do you fly? What is that? Can you tell me and I would understand it at all?
Well, I don't know. Maybe you would.
What do you fly?
My airplane is a twin-engine Aero Commander.
Have an idea what that is. I do.
It's parked over in the airport. You could probably see it if you go outside your door
and
take a look over there.
Right.
It's parked on the ramp. A wonderful airplane. I've had it now 13 years. It burns a little bit of fuel. That's a bit of an issue. But it goes pretty fast, and I can carry a big load. So oftentimes I'm taking a number of engineers with me when I go to visit a job site. And so it's very, very convenient. For instance, Friday I got to be down in San Diego for a project meeting. It takes me an hour and 15 minutes to get to San Diego. That is just so convenient.
Now, let me mention something else that Randy does, because I want to acknowledge him for this as a veteran. And that is during the services that we all have on Veterans Day, Memorial Day. Are you still flying those flights?
I am.
Okay.
Randy's
one of the guys that flies in the missing man formations or has the parachute people. Do you usually have the parachute people?
I do the parachute.
Yeah, you do the parachute. Okay, yeah. I remember trying to get holy on some radio one time. And I was like, what the heck is this? Anyway, Randy does the parachute drop thing. And thank you very much for that. I mean, I sincerely mean that.
That is so much fun. We've been doing this now for about 10 years, and it's the same two jumpers, old guys like me. They show up on Saturday, I think, before Memorial Day, and sometimes they stay at our house. So we party a little bit, but then Memorial Day we all go out to the Spirit of San Luis for breakfast.
Where are they from?
They're from Southern California.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
We don't have any parachute-y people here?
Well, actually, we do. You know, they do parachute jumping out at Oceano Airport. So if you want to do some skydiving, you can go out there and do that.
Go watch somebody else.
Or watch someone else skydive. Well, you know what pilots say. Why would you jump out of a perfectly good airplane?
That and the other one I liked is one of those things where they have all this pilot-y stuff, and they said the great thing about a Piper Cub or one of these things is always the first to be at the crash site, the first to arrive at the crash site. So I'm like, anyway. But I think that's really great. And so, once again, eMarinari Festival is this weekend, this Saturday and Sunday. The weather's supposed to be nice, a little bit warm maybe, but definitely special. And so this is going to be Saturday and Sunday from 10 o'clock until 6 o'clock. There'll be vendors and food and stuff and things. And you can be downtown. You can go back and forth, as Randy said, see when they start. And as this thing evolves, these different paintings evolve. Don't forget, if you want to buy a square or you want to sponsor somebody doing the square, call Shelley at 927-1697. That's 927-1697. Or you can go to AIACentralCoast.org and get all the scoop right there. I hope you'll go there and just look at, if you haven't seen this festival before, I hope you'll go to that website and look at this brochure and just look at some of these paintings. They're just absolutely insane. And I thank Randy you for being here again.
Bill,
I'll see you in a year.
Another year will go by?
Maybe sooner than that. We never know. And so I thought we'd find something Italian-ish to play, and I think I got it.
Oh, this is the night. It's a beautiful night. And we call it a bella notte. Look at the skies. They have stars in their eyes. On this lovely enchantment to hear the night
when the one you love is near. For this is the night when the heavens are right on this lovely bed on the
Pacific Coast Kitchen and Bath, we're all about improving your life. When you remodel your kitchen or bath, we want to make sure that you get exactly what you want. A fabulous spa-like bathroom with a walk-in shower, invigorating shower heads, and state-of-the-art faucets. Maybe your dream is a beautiful country farmhouse sink. Pacific Coast Kitchen and Bath has the fixtures. You have the dreams.
Pacific Coast Kitchen and Bath, behind Trader Joe's in San Luis Obispo.
Greetings, fellow travelers and fellow students. This is the Good Doctor. Oh, I love this time of year. All those fresh-faced young Cuesta and Poly kids, so full of life and other effervescent fluids. Takes me back to my old college days at Boyle Green University. Then my master's in red beans from Rice and my doctorate from Oklahoma State. I'm here to impart an important lesson to all you new students who won't find it in any textbook. Number one, your mama ain't here no more, and she ain't gonna cook you no homemade breakfast. Number two, the Bon Ton Creole Cafe has the best homemade breakfast in town and serves it till 2 p.m. And three, Bon Ton Creole Cafe loves you so much, just text the word Gator right now to 68255 and get a free fried green tomato appetizer, courtesy of the Bon Ton Creole Cafe. Well, we're not your mama, but until you head home with that sack of dirty laundry, we're all you got. 1000 Olive Street, San Louisiana.
For 125 years, Mercedes-Benz has produced the world's most advanced automobiles, and Star Automotive is dedicated to maintaining those vehicles for many years to come. Hi, this is Brian from Star Automotive. I wish to thank over 1,000 Mercedes owners who have trusted us with their vehicles the last 5 years. The Star Automotive Independent Mercedes-Benz Service Center can be found in SLO at the corner of Broad and Francis, on the web at starautomotive.com, or by calling 543-STAR. We'll keep the smile on your face and the star on your car.
Sha-la-la-la. Means I love you. Hey, well, you're Bill Blanker, Talkers Chief, Friends and Neighbors Network. Thanks for joining me on this Tuesday, the 4th of September. Weather, as I said, we are going to have a kind of a, it's going to start to cool, and then it's going to start to get warmer again by the weekend. So I have a feeling, as a guess, but I don't know, the weather's changed so much. We never used to have, you know, 90 degrees in April, so I don't know what's going to happen. But usually we used to have a September Indian summer here on the Central Coast. Whether or not we're going to get one this year or not, I don't know. The wildfire in L.A. is called the Williams Fire, by the way, and it's 4,100 acres is what that is as of yesterday. And they had to evacuate thousands of recreation people because they, and a few dozen residents because they just had to get them out of there. Okay, here's the kind of story that you don't really want to hear, but it's here. It's in front of me, so I'm going to tell you about it. School officials benefited from cash out. For nearly a decade, California top school administrators got to collect six-figure lump sum cash payments in addition to their pensions by taking advantage of a little-known legislative provision that was intended to help retain and recruit teachers during the dot-com boom. Program known as a partial lump sum was called. Anyway, so according to the AP's analysis, approximately 180 participating retirees receive $100,000 or more a year in pensions, took home an average additional lump sum payment of $147,000 when they retired between 2002 and 2010. I don't understand the California legislature whatsoever. It's just like, you know, and I don't understand what they're doing half the time. I don't think they understand it. But a lot of what's happening is we want to take money from you. We're going to steal your money to pay somebody else. Thank you. Can't tell you how good I feel about that. Here is a thing they said. Autistic students face far more bullying, according to research. And so they said it's a profound public health problem. The research found that the risk of being bullied was greatest for high-functioning children who end up in mainstream classes where their quirks and unusual mannerisms stand out and they're more exposed to bullies. I don't know what the answer into bullying is. I've known it my whole life. I don't know how you get around it. I don't know how it stops. But I know we're trying very hard to stop it, though. You know, there's a lot of programs going on where people are trying to say, okay, let's do this. There's a poaching frenzy going on in Africa, and can I say this picture of this dead elephant is one of the most grotesque things I've seen in the paper in some time. I can live with it, but it's like, okay. Now here's the deal. China's economic boom is what's doing this, because now in China, now I don't know how much middle-class people in China can afford stuff, but they're saying that elephant tusks, elephant ivory, goes for $1,000 a pound in Beijing. So anyway, it's always been prized by the Chinese, as you all know. And they say more and more people can afford it. $1,000 a pound? Okay. If you had a pound of ivory, what would you have made? Teapot? What? Anyway, I'd just soon keep the $1,000. So let's see what else is going on. Oh, wait, there was some. We'll get to this. But there's two stories in the news today that were like, are you serious? Jeez, please. Okay. Now, here's an interesting thing. Syria's top government spokesman declared Monday that the refugees fleeing its borders are welcome back at any time, mocked the presence of Egypt and Turkey for their condemnation, and called the arms of opposition unfit for negotiations. I mentioned this story because of this. I spoke to someone today whose nephew is just finishing helicopter piloting school somewhere, and they're projected deployment is near Syria. Well, it's Turkey, probably Turkey. But the idea is that they're going to be near Syria. That's where they're headed. So I guess they expect something to hit the fan there sooner or later. Tens of thousands of customers remained in the dark in Louisiana, Mississippi. Tensions are high as police in Vallejo are investigating its fifth fatal officer shooting. Officer involved shooting this year. This turned out to be a pellet gun again. I don't know why people get into this idea that I don't know what they think the cops are going to do when you brandish a weapon. That's the right term to use. You brandish a weapon. They're not going to sit there and analyze what kind of weapon it is. they're going to brandish back. People are just weird with this kind of stuff. But then again, maybe these people aren't well, is what I'm always guessing there. And authorities are warning of dangerous rip currents at beaches along the coastline of Southern California. And pay attention to that, too. I think it was Manhattan Beach years ago. I mean, this is when I was just out of the service, or I was even in the service. I don't remember. Anyway, I got involved in a riptide, and I was, like, just bad. I'm yelling there, trying to wave my arm to help somebody help me, and then people are waving back. No, I have a problem here. Anyway, so I ended up somewhere in Mexico and had to walk back. It was really bad. Things are always terrible in Afghanistan and Pakistan. So a heinous act, they called, a bomb hits U.S. staff in Pakistan. Two Americans are hurt, two Pakistanis killed. Bring it all home. FAA reports increasing collision between birds and planes. I should ask Randy about this. Anyway, they said this reminded me of the thing that they had, that Julie Tacker wrote in the CalCoastNews.com. The victims could fill a novice birdwatcher's bucket list: a black pole warbler, a double-crested cormorant, American black duck, short-billed dowitcher, black-crowned night heron, magnolia warbler, bagheera gar, and a green-winged teal. The other victims could fill an airplane repair shop, several Boeing 737s, a Boeing 717, a Beechcraft Boeing, a Boeing 747, a Boeing 757, a Boeing 767. Birds and jet airplanes don't play well together. They don't. And it really is weird. You know, when they take it seems so weird to me, because have you ever seen the test they do on a jet engine? You can just Google it. Go to YouTube and look up jet engine testing. And when they, like, test for water, you know, how much water can go into it, I mean, they use a fire hose and aim it right at that jet engine, and somehow the thing still works. Don't ask me how. But one bird, that's a wrap. So I don't know. I always wondered, well, couldn't they put some kind of screens, like, you know, not real fine screens, of course, but, you know, some kind of something in front of the engines there, so they... Anyway. I remember back in the days in Boston when the Starlings, they had a big problem with Starlings in Boston. This was back in the 50s, and it'd bring down airplanes. All right, there's no point at all in getting involved with the columnists and the commentary people until this whole election's over. And even after that, there's really no point in getting involved with them, because you know where they're going to go. No matter where they go, they're going to go. They always go the same direction, and it's all the same stuff all over again. Now, this is the thing that I'm really wondering about, and I think we all have to wonder about, to tell you the truth, and that is that, and that's this new EPA mileage thing, that basically it's called the 54.5 mile per gallon by the year 2025. They say it's not going to really be that much, it's going to be, but they say that a new car will be getting 45 miles per gallon, a new truck 32 miles per gallon by then. So now the question becomes, what is it you're going to sacrifice? Because you're going to sacrifice safety or something. Something's going to have to be sacrificed. There's no two ways about it, unless they can make unless they find a way to make carbon fiber a lot cheaper. You know, if you thought a smart car wasn't all that smart, you know, it's a glorified roller skate, you know, that gets lousy mileage compared to what something's going to have to get. So if that little thing can't get really great gas mileage, or at least, you know, what this EPA requirement's going to be, what's a car going to look like that you can get good gas mileage in? What's a car going to look like that you can get 45 miles a gallon in? Now, maybe, we'll just go to more and more hybrids, you know, not total electric cars, but more and more hybrids, some of those too, but more and more hybrids. And in essence, you know, the motor will be, you know, running a generator and charging batteries, in which case, you know, that might work. Prius came out with an idea, and it's funny, too, because it's an idea I thought of many, many moons ago. And I was just glad to see they did it. I don't take credit for the idea. Lots of people think the same thing all the time. Although I do think that cars could actually be, behind the radiators, could actually be equipped with turbines, wind turbines of some kind, you know, cylindrical wind turbines, and that could help generate some electricity for the car. But anyway, Prius put that solar panel on the roof to help run the air conditioning, which I thought was brilliant to do that, and it was. I'm glad they're doing that. I think more automakers should consider doing such a thing. I don't know why that wouldn't be like an. You know, if you're going to require 45 miles a gallon, or 54, whatever it is, if you're going to require that, then why can't you stay here? You got to put a roof in the car that has solar. Why wouldn't you do that? Yeah. I don't know. So long, whales. Farewell, cetaceans. Here's everybody saying, oh, the whales are going to go. So here's again. I don't know. They say the guns will repeatedly discharge an enormously loud sound, 260 decibels, every 13 to 15 seconds, 24 hours a day for 2 months. So I say, can there be any question about the negative impact this will have? Yeah, I do question what the negative impact will be, but I'm worried most about, I think the animals are going to leave. When they start doing lower level, you know, stuff to get the animals to go, I think they're going to go. Why would an animal stay? It wouldn't. But I'm really, really concerned about our fishermen because they've been through the worst of the worst of the worst already. So, and here's the Wall Street casino, as they call it, where they have hedge funds. You know, these wonderful hedge funds you've heard so much about. So they basically they gamble on, you know, how much price of gas is going to go up, and by doing that, it forces the gas to go up further. So it has nothing to do with what's in the ground at the moment. It has nothing to do with what's in a barrel that hasn't gone into a refinery yet. It has to do with just people on the stock market fiddling around with stuff. We plebeians cannot not be concerned about such lofty things. Okay. Pension plan backfired on Stockton. Stockton had all their dough in Lehman Brothers, and when it went bankrupt, that was the end of Stockton. That was the end of Bill Benica. Anyway, so they went bad, and so they had their money invested there, as a lot of cities did have money invested in certain, you know, things like that. You know, so should have had your money in Bain Capital. Can you love a bargain too much is the question they're asking on the business page today. They're saying, what is that? Can you love a here's what's happened. JCPenney thought, well, if Walmart can pull off this low prices every day and that's what people expect, then we should be able to pull that off ourselves. So the JCPenney went and said, okay, let's try this low prices every day thing. And because people now are so used to shopping for sales, they won't even shop anything that's not a sale. Because of that, JCPenney's didn't actually succeed with that program, so they had to do sales plus low prices. But what they're saying now is that so many people expect low prices because of, you know, the kind of activity that had to take place because of the recession, that the retailers are just barely making it because everybody is going to wait till you're selling it for the rock bottom price they think you can sell it for, and that's when they buy, and they won't buy until then. So it's very interesting how that's happened to our economy and what it's doing. I'm delighted to tell you about something that I haven't talked about extensively before, but I certainly am going to tell you today. I went and saw Cody out at Idler Sleep Shop in Idler Sleep Center in San Luis Obispo. They're at 189 Cross Street, which is right at the end of Short Street. So, you know, it's right in that thing. They're about 100 yards from the actual Idler's appliance thing, but they're over there in the dead-end corner there. Anyway, it's very, very calm and nice in there. I mean, it's really very pleasant. Anyway, but we went, and Nancy and I went, and we test drove some Tempur-Pedics. And I have to tell you, they have just amazing mattresses. And here's the thing about Tempur-Pedic. You can get, and I didn't know this, I thought Tempur-Pedic was just a Tempur-Pedic mattress. That was it. It's not at all. You can get soft mattresses. You can get medium mattresses. You can get very firm mattresses. The nice thing that they've done at the Sleep Source is the Sleep Center is that they've already weeded out a lot of things that people don't like to begin with, you know, and they do it on a national basis because once again, you know, they're part of this great ability to buy things at a brand store, so they can buy a lot of stuff cheaper. And but here's the interesting thing. Tempur-Pedics have unilateral pricing. If somebody's saying to you, well, you won't find a cheaper Tempur-Pedic, you know, anywhere else, you're not going to find a more expensive Tempur-Pedic either, because Tempur-Pedic basically says this is what you're going to sell our product for. Okay, and there's other people that do the same thing, by the way. So anyway, that's the way it is. So the question you have then is, well, who do you want to buy it from? Idler's has been there since 1954, and they've always worked great for your appliances. They've worked for the great kitchen stuff now, and now here they have that they have the bedding. So they have also Sealy Optimum and Beauty Rest and all those. Advanced Performance Linens, choice of six colors. They have Prima, I think it's how you say it, Prima, and Egyptian cotton and assorted pillows, too. So you get the pillows, the mix-and-match pillows. The Sealy Optimum is this new thing that's also a gel kind of affair. Anyway, I would suggest that you get to Eidler's if you're going to buy any kind of a mattress. And you don't have they have lots of things besides Tempur-Pedic, and they have, you know, all kinds of different prices and everything. And so, but they, like they've said, they've tried to sort through it first. So Eidler's Sleep Center in San Luis Obispo in Paso Robles. Get a nice mattress for yourself, and boy, those feel good. They feel so good. I have to admit, they really feel good. I have to admit, I have to be a player on that here sooner or later. Anyway, it's really, really nice. All right. Apparently we missed today. Well, let's see. Just a little bit of sports. The number one player in the world right now is Rory McIlroy, and he won again at the Deutsche Bank tournament in Massachusetts. And it was on a course. Arnold Palmer designed the course, by the way. But it doesn't matter who designs it. That man can whap that ball around, I got to tell you. Tiger came in something, I forget. He came in third or fourth, I forget. I don't think it's really relevant anymore. Although he's still considered one of the top people in the country, so I guess I shouldn't say it that way. Mickelson had 66, tied for fourth, I say. I'll find it here. Oh, yeah. Woods made an early charge to get back in the hunt, though he never got closer than three shots until a two-putt birdie on the par 5 18th gave him a 66. He finished in third place, two shots behind, and earned enough money to become the first player to surpass. Are you ready for this? So Tiger Woods, it's not like he ain't doing anything. Tiger Woods is the first player to surpass $100 million in PGA Tour winnings. Holy dump truck. Like I told you before, if you go to some of these things and you look up how much the prize is for the, you know, not just the first, second, third players, but you go down to the fifth, the tenth, the twelfth, it'll stun you at how much money they're getting for even coming in down there. I mean, you can be fairly not that great and still make a decent salary, a decent income in golf, which I think is interesting. I think it's interesting. Anybody else in the news? Well, let's see. The Dodgers won, and in college football, Brodus is the player of the week in the Big Sky Conference, the Cal Poly quarterback, and that's good news there also. So that's kind of fun. Dodgers walk off with a win again. So where are we now? About three games behind, I think. I think it's three games behind the Giants. So this is a funny way they put this. Oh, wait, I have something I wanted to share with you. Wait a minute. I stopped watching when Regis left and Kelly Ripa started having just everybody and their grandmother be a guest host. I gave up. And I just said to Nancy, I said, why don't they just make Michael Strahan the guy and forget the rest of the whole thing?
He's George. He is a good little monkey and always very curious. One day, George got an important letter. He's built a rocket ship to travel into space.
Google, how far is Earth to the moon?
Moon is 238,900 miles from
the great moment had come. 3, 2, 1.
I try to not think about it as replacing Regis. Nobody can ever do that. And I think if you put it in that aspect or you think about it, it's just too big. So I just look at it as an opportunity to go on TV and tell stories and have fun, entertain myself and other people, and not look at the big magnitude and scope of it. And
but you
trust me,
that
I trip out.
Job.
Yeah.
Right
and you and I.
So Michael Strahan got the job, and that's the good news, because I think he's absolutely a hoot, that guy, and I think he works well with Kelly and their old friends and everything, and I just think that that's the way to go. So there, good. That's what I just want to tell you about. Michael Strahan's now on, it's now called Kelly and Michael or something like that.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant. And if you threw a party, invited everyone you knew, you would see the biggest gift would be from me. And the car. Thank you.
thanks for being a friend today. Thanks for joining me. I'm Bill Benneker. We'll get together again tomorrow at noon. Until then, hail your trails, be happy ones, and don't believe everything you hear here, because
this is Talk is Cheap. The game is over. The Friends and Neighbors Network. Game over. With Bill Benneker.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then.
Happy trails.